Hello, this is Karen Fresco with the News Gazette dated Wednesday, December 30, 2020. We begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Illinois Impact. Champaign, Vermilion counties each report 3 fatalities. Douglas has highest 7-day rate in Region 6. For the second straight month, 30 Champaign County residents have lost their lives to COVID-19. 2 women and a man, all in their 90s, became the 28th, 29th, and 30th county residents to die in December. Vermilion County health officials also reported 3 deaths Tuesday, a man in his 40s, a woman in her 70s, and a woman in her 90s. Also of concern in the county, 41 COVID-19 positive residents now hospitalized. This feels like the first step of doing something that may help us get back to normal, or a new normal, whatever that may be, Kirby Medical Center's Jennifer Moss said, of 100 frontline workers getting vaccinated this week in Monticello. An outbreak at the Danville Correctional Center took a slight turn in the right direction, with active inmate cases down by 8 to 563. It remains the most cases at an Illinois prison, 263 more than at Lawrence CC in Sumter County. The 7-day positivity rate for the region that covers East Central Illinois fell from 8.6% to 8.3%. Douglas now has the highest rate of Region 6's 21 counties, 12.7%. Crawford, the lowest, 4.9%. That article by Jeff D'Alessio. Coronavirus response. Vermilion County waiting on vaccine. Champaign County expecting 3rd shipment soon. By Deborah Pressey. While Champaign County was poised to receive its 3rd COVID-19 vaccine shipment soon, Vermilion County had yet to receive a single vaccine dose. Our understanding is if we do not have it by the 24th, it would have been here yesterday, Doug Toole, administrator of the Vermilion County Health Department, said Tuesday of that county's first vaccine shipment. As of Tuesday afternoon, still no vaccine in Vermilion County, he said. With healthcare personnel first in line statewide for COVID-19 vaccinations, neither of Vermilion County's hospitals, OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center, and Carl Hupston Regional Health Center, had received vaccines for its staff members. That's in contrast to Champaign County, where vaccinations of medical staff at 2 Urbana hospitals, Carl Foundation Hospital and OSF Heart of Mary Medical Center, were underway with the first shipment about a week before Christmas. With part of Champaign County's second shipment received last week, vaccinations continued for medical staff at Carl, OSF Heart of Mary, plus several other medical providers in the county. In Piatt County, Kirby Medical Center in Monticello began vaccinating staff members Monday after receiving 100 doses of the Moderna vaccine. Carl spokeswoman Jamie Mullen said Carl had vaccinated 2,500 of its employees system-wide, not including Carl Hupston, in the first 10 days of receiving vaccines, starting with the first employees at Carl Foundation Hospital on December 17. Why Vermilion County remained out in the cold vaccine-wise, Toole said he couldn't answer, though he's asked the Illinois Department of Public Health. All counties in the state should have received some vaccines by at least the second week of shipments, said the state agency's spokeswoman, Melanie Arnold. We are tracking down what is happening in Vermilion, she said. Meanwhile, COVID-19 has been hitting Vermilion County hard. As of Tuesday, 41 Vermilion County residents, 6% of the county's 708 active COVID-19 cases, were hospitalized. And the county's 7-day positivity rate was 11.4%. Vaccinating OSF Sacred Heart's medical staff is important, Squire said. OSF is depending on the state and Vermilion County Health Department for vaccine updates, and its current stance as of Tuesday, he said, was waiting patiently and praying. Vaccine distributions made during the first week were reserved for the counties with the 50 highest COVID-19 death rates in the state. And while Champaign County isn't one of them, it did receive some doses the first week. That's because Carle Foundation Hospital is one of the state's 10 regional vaccine distribution hubs and serves dozens of counties. In Champaign County, there were 460 doses of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine in that first shipment that went to Carle and some OSF Heart of Mary frontline healthcare workers. Part of Champaign County's second shipment arrived last week, 2 trays of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine with 975 doses per tray, and went to continue vaccinating healthcare personnel in Champaign County, according to Brandon Meline, COVID-19 response coordinator for the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. The second part of Champaign County's second shipment, 4,000 doses of the Moderna vaccine, arrived Monday and was already being distributed mostly to healthcare personnel this week. CUPHD also scheduled about 300 appointments over 4 days starting Tuesday to vaccinate some EMS-certified emergency medical technicians and firefighters in the county who aren't affiliated with Carle or OSF, Meline said. It was unknown if Champaign County's third shipment, expected to be both types of vaccine, would arrive yet this week or early next week, according to Meline. With the next shipment, Champaign County should be nearing completion of vaccinations for medical personnel and nursing home residents who choose to be vaccinated, Meline said. We think by the first full week of the new year, we might be moving into other groups, he said. Next in line are adults 75 and older and critical infrastructure employees, such as police officers, firefighters, correctional officers, people working in transportation, educators, and potentially such frontline workers as grocery store employees. Details remain to be worked out, Meline said, but Champaign County is prioritizing people working face-to-face with the public as much as we can, he said. Toole said he had been getting plenty of inquiries from Vermilion County residents about when they can be vaccinated, and he tells them that depends on a lot of factors, among them when shipments will arrive and how large they will be. I say check back with me in March, he said. The stories of 2020, those we lost. Exactly how Coach would have wanted it. By Bob Asmussen. On July 25, the Champaign-Urbana, University of Illinois, and college basketball communities lost a legend. Lou Henson, the U of I's all-time winningest basketball coach, passed away at age 88 after a long battle with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, viral encephalitis, and pre-leukemia. What followed next was an extraordinary and hush-hush act of kindness and selflessness by wife Mary, the love of Lou's life for 65 years, daughters Lori, Lisa, and Lee Ann, and the rest of the Henson family. In a normal, non-pandemic time, the celebration of life for Lou Henson would have filled State Farm Center with mourners. Given his stature in the game, he is a finalist for election to the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame, a who's who of coaches, administrators, and former players would have descended on Champaign-Urbana for the funeral. But the Henson family knew they couldn't let that happen. The risk of COVID-19 was too great. The last thing the Hensons wanted was to put anyone in danger or to create a super spreader event. For safety's sake, the Hensons went to great lengths to limit the amount of information shared with anyone outside the immediate family. The few who were told were asked to keep it private. It was a difficult decision, but necessary. Everyone respected the family's wishes. The news did not leak on Twitter or Facebook, Snapchat or Instagram. National writers did not have sources telling them a word. ESPN's Crawl mentioned nothing of it. In other communities, it might have been impossible to keep it quiet. Not in Champaign-Urbana, where privacy is valued. The secret was safe. Those who talked to Mary about it after the fact all said the same thing. It was the right thing to do. Surrounded by family, Henson passed away on a Saturday, July 25. Working with Morgan Memorial Home in Savoy, the funeral was set for Wednesday morning, July 29. The family wanted to have the funeral earlier in the week, but arrangements couldn't be made in time. There was no indoor service at the Henson's Church, First Baptist at Savoy. Instead, 20 family members attended a touching event at Champaign's Rose Lawn Cemetery. Large American and Illini flags flew above the service, whipping in the wind. The service was filmed by the Henson's grandson, Will Edison, a professional videographer. The family wanted to be able to share it later with extended family members and friends. Passers-by certainly would have noticed there was a ceremony going on, but there was no indication it was Coach Henson being laid to rest. Henson's pastor, Chuck Moore, opened with Psalm 16. As I was reading those words, I thought to myself, they reflect the very witness of Lou. Because you are so close to me, Lord, and are always available, my confidence will never be shaken. For I experience your presence every moment of my life. My heart and my soul are filled with joy. My body will rest, and I will feel secure. For you will never abandon me to the realms of the dead, nor will allow your servant to experience corruption. For you bring me a continued revelation of resurrected life, a pathway to the beauty that I will experience when I see you face to face. With traffic noise in the background, Pastor Moore offered comfort and hope to the small gathering of Henson's family. The song "Because He Lives" by Alabama was played early in the service. Pastor Moore mentioned basketball during his remarks. Specifically, he brought up the many comebacks by the Flying Illini on their march to the 1989 Final Four. He tied the on-court success to the many personal comebacks by Henson. Diagnosed with stage 4 cancer in 2003, he recovered and overcame medical setbacks. He never stopped trying, getting back on the golf course and in the swimming pool. He played bridge both for fun and to keep his mind sharp. And he followed basketball as if he had a game to coach the next day. Henson's willingness to battle against the odds inspired friends and strangers alike. For years, he received calls, cards, and letters thanking him for his positive attitude in the face of adversity. The letters mentioned his courage. The service closed with "Blessed Assurance" by Alan Jackson. Henson loved country music. His favorites were the Statler brothers, who he saw perform and met after he retired as coach. Had the service been inside a church or at State Farm Center, country music would have been part of the program. As the service ended, there were hugs among the mask-wearing family members and tears. The service lasted less than 18 minutes. As was pointed out, Henson would have appreciated the brevity. Part of his humble, okay Oklahoma nature was to let the spotlight shine elsewhere and put others ahead of himself. After the service, as the story of Henson's death broke at newsgazette.com, attendees returned to the Henson home on Bedford Drive and had a socially distanced meal together. Henson's spirit lives on in Mary, Lori, Lisa, Leanne, 12 grandchildren, and 7 great-grandchildren. Mary follows basketball like her husband. She was tuned in to Northwestern's upset against Michigan State on December 20, spotting Wildcats athletic director Jim Phillips, a Coach Henson protege, during the telecast. Phillips, who will soon be the new ACC commissioner, considered Henson as a second father. Their last communication, they exchanged messages on Father's Day. Phillips listens to the recording when he needs a pick-me-up. Phillips was not surprised when the family decided to delay a celebration of life to a safer time. To Phillips, it summed up who Lou and Mary Henson have always been. He called it exceptionally beautiful, exactly how Coach would have wanted it. Mary considered spending time at the family home in New Mexico, but decided to remain in Champaign. She is staying safe and keeps in contact with her daughters, grandkids, and friends. Mary and Lou never discussed his service. They talked only about life going forward. Henson survived 17 years after his cancer diagnosis, the first couple of Champaign-Urbana feeling lucky and thankful to have that amount of time together. Today, Lou is always on Mary's mind. For their 65 years together, she was his greatest advocate. That relationship hasn't changed. Mary, so quiet during the week, was gracious enough to discuss her husband's impact on August 1 on WDWS 1400 AM's popular Saturday morning radio show, exactly a week after Lou's death. The timing and her tone was right, Mary rattling off some of the many messages she received since Lou's passing, expressing thanks to everyone who reached out. "It's nice to be here," she said, directing her first public comments to co-hosts Lauren Tate and Steve Kelly, but really to anyone listening. "It's good to see old friends again." From the Our County section, Champaign County Courts, ex-paramedic sentenced to prison for ambulance sex assault, by Mary Schenck Urbana. A veteran paramedic who used his position to scout for victims has been sentenced to 13 years in prison for sexually assaulting a woman in an ambulance. Judge Randy Rosenbaum said Jeffrey Sanford Jr. had two sides, the public person who worked hard as a medical professional to support his family, and the private person who took advantage of those with physical and psychological problems who he thought wouldn't be believed. "He has destroyed the public trust in calling for an ambulance," Rosenbaum said, of the 48-year-old Gifford man, whom he convicted in an October bench trial of criminal sexual assault. Sanford faced 4 to 15 years in prison and will have to serve 85% or 11 years. Although he was convicted of only one criminal act, forcing a 49-year-old suicidal woman to perform oral sex on him in an OSF Pro ambulance on July 21, 2019, Assistant State's Attorney Kristen Alferink presented evidence linking Sanford to sexually inappropriate conduct with a 10-year-old girl in his home, an adult woman who had called for an ambulance, and an 89-year-old woman with dementia. The victim of Sanford's crime read her 3-minute impact statement to the judge, describing herself as very paranoid and unable to leave her home, be in small spaces, or sleep well. You took and raped my spirit as well, said the wife, mother, and grandmother. How will I get back in a vehicle that was supposed to save my life? A teenage girl who was a guest in Sanford's home years ago, when she was 10, described him masturbating in front of her and asked her to touch him. She refused. Her mother testified that the experience changed her formerly outgoing, happy child. She became very withdrawn, was mean to other girls at school, started self-harming, and wouldn't go anywhere alone, she said, adding that her child has also attempted to take her own life. Champaign County Sheriff's investigator Tim Beckett said he interviewed a woman who, after reading of Sanford's crime in the newspaper, reported in January 2020 that Sanford came to her home the morning after an ambulance transport to check on her and ask to have sex. On a second ambulance transport, Beckett said, the woman reported Sanford took her hand and tried to place it on his crotch. He also called and sent her texts afterward, suggesting they have sex. The woman told Beckett she had not given Sanford a phone number, so he must have obtained it from her medical records. Rantoul Detective Matt Bross testified that the adult granddaughter and caretaker of an 89-year-old Rantoul woman with profound dementia reported finding her grandmother and Sanford together in her grandmother's home more than once in a disheveled state, and that it smelled like they had just had sex. Bross said Sanford was on the ambulance crew that had transported the elderly woman to the hospital 7 times between November 2018 and 2019 and was aware of her mental deficiencies. He said Sanford reported he had been friends with the woman for years. To lessen Sanford's sentence, defense attorney Anthony Bruno of Urbana had Sanford's younger brother and a longtime friend testify about how responsible, straight-laced, and hardworking Sanford has always been. He was also a volunteer firefighter for many years. Arguing for the maximum 15 years, Alferink said Sanford's victim is broken and had attempted to take her life again earlier this week. She said it was unconscionable and unforgivable that he tried to shift blame to her when initially confronted by police with her allegations. That he propositioned a child, a female ambulance patient, and a woman with dementia was evidence that this defendant really will prey on anyone at any moment, she said. Bruno called his client imperfect, but noted he had saved at least 25 people from cardiac arrest and delivered 36 babies in his 20-plus years as a paramedic. There are a lot of people grateful because Mr. Sanford was there, and certainly a few who wish they never met him, said Bruno, reminding the judge that Sanford was supporting a wife and 2 children who rely on him. Sanford told the judge he was so embarrassed and that he had broken his wife's heart and left his family financially strapped. I've destroyed the trust of the community in emergency medical services, he said. Sanford said he took responsibility for his actions and was sorry for what he did to the woman that resulted in his conviction. I wish I could take everything back, but I cannot. Please have mercy on my family, he cried. Rosenbaum called Sanford an opportunist but said because of his sincere remorse for the pain he's caused, he would not sentence him to the maximum. Sanford had no previous criminal convictions. Bird's Eye View, Unit 4, at newsgazette.com, video. Staff writer Anthony Zillis took his drone to check out the progress on the Champaign Central construction. Final additions at Central are taking shape. Champaign. The final portion of Champaign Central's massive renovation project is beginning to take shape, even though ground won't be broken on what the district is calling the North Fields until 2022. Earlier this month, the district released a video meant to replace the community feedback sessions held in pre-COVID-19 days for the projects. The video was meant to solicit the same feedback on what will be the final major portion of the renovations at Champaign Central and Centennial. The end is in sight, down the road a ways, Unit 4 Capital Projects Manager Mark Rossler said. Plenty has to be done before ground is broken and turf is laid for the soccer and softball fields to be placed north of the school across from Church Street. The church that the Champaign Central Band is currently using in place of its band room and marching band field will eventually be demolished. Lynn Street will be closed on that lot to create a contiguous 4-acre lot. Right now, the site of the old YMCA is merely a staging location for construction equipment for the rest of the project. On the actual building, a steel structure is beginning to rise to form the second major addition to the school after the field house was finished this fall. In order to do that, a large portion of the existing building had to be demolished. Erecting the entire steel frame, Rossler said, will take a few months. We're finally getting some structure out of the ground, so we've been working on the demolition for a long time, Rossler said. That took a while, getting some of the underground foundations in. We're beginning to see some of the skeleton of the buildings come up. People can finally notice it as they drive through. Rossler said that in the small time in-person school was in session, the district did see improvements to the traffic patterns because of new pickup and drop-off locations in back of the school, where two staff parking lots were built. The effects of the 5-year project are beginning to be felt as the renovated school and reformed lots begin to take shape. The end may be in sight, but plenty of work remains. We feel like with the heavy-duty crunch time, we're at the peak or just past it, Rossler said. That article by Anthony Zillis. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette dated Wednesday, December 30, 2020. Please stay tuned.